cliffcentral.com.
Which brings us to This Is Us, another edition of This Is Us. Every Tuesday at 7:30 a.m. we're joined by Yatish Nasi and Lebang Hosana to unpack what we can all do to spread positivity, kindness, and a fresh injection of hope into South Africa. We've been doing this for a few weeks now. We've had some really interesting guests on. This morning, I'm pleased to tell you, we've got one of my favorite people in the whole world on. His name is Muzi Kozwayo, and we had Muzi on as one of my guests not so long ago. Muzi has written an incredible book, which is a storybook. It's called The South African Promise. But the beautiful thing about this story is it's not just theory, because Muzi, in the story, which is the story of this young woman who's talking to an elder, a village elder, someone she respects, she asks him how we can make South Africa a better place. And what's magnificent about the way that it's written is that you don't feel like you're being preached to. Muzi has thought about these things for many years, probably his whole life. He cares deeply about South Africa. He's very positive about what the future holds for us. And he says there are things we need to do to get this place right. And if you haven't heard the interview that I did with him, you're in luck, because this morning, along with Yatish and Lebang, we'll be talking to Muzi Kozwayo, and we'll find out what exactly he thinks about This Is Us, about South Africa, about where we go from here, and why we should be optimistic. We unpack the concept of citizen service, how we can get that going. We talk a little bit about apathy and how we can get everyone invested again, and how we inspire a culture of action, not just tweeting, reposting, and signaling, which is so easy to do, right? Actually doing something is much, much harder. And we're going to get into all of that in just a moment or two. So I'll welcome Yatish and Muzi in just a short while. Lebang, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, no, I'm actually quite keen to have this chat today because, you know, at the core of what This Is Us is, it's really just like solutions. Like, what are we doing here, people? Like, really, each of us individually, what is our plan to try and make tomorrow better? So I started reading a little bit of Muzi's book yesterday after we had that chat, Gareth, and I was just like, this is so cool. Like, how he's put this together. It's really not, it's number one, it's an easy read. Number two, I feel like it's a storytelling kind of energy where I'm just like enthralled and just now picturing, you know, the thing about reading again is that you can really like you make it up in your mind. You put how the people look and how they sound and the tone and all of that. He just did it so beautifully. And the fact that it's like, you know, it's based on solutions. I love that. I'm excited to chat to him today. I just want to pick his brain, man.
You know, what's so great is that he's written it for kids, but he's also written it for adults. I mean, there are not a lot of books that have been written in the last while that appeal to both children and adults the way this one might. And he's not looking to make money out of it, by the way, before we even bring Muzi on, because I don't want him to have to tell you this. This is something I should be telling you. It's so great that he's done this and he's made it free. You can go online and get your own copy of the book. It's available at southafricaspromise.org.za for free. And you can download it for your kids. I mean, you know, kids these days, they've got their own iPads and their own phones. Give it to them to read. And read a chapter to them every night for the next couple of weeks as we get, you know, closer and closer to elections, and we get closer and closer to the end of what has been a really tough 2 years for many people. Let your kids learn about this stuff, because unfortunately, they don't learn it at school. No one teaches anyone civics at school. And then you get out into the world and you wonder, oh, why do I have to pay this tax stuff? Why do I have to be in a society? Why do I have to worry about what other people are doing? Why do I have to participate in the economy in this way or in society in this way? And if we don't have that stuff, you're missing out hugely. And your kids can really benefit from this. So go to southafricaspromise.org.za. I'm saying all of this before Muzi comes on, because he's not going to promote it himself, even though it's terrific work. So I would love to have you download this book in droves, support what Muzi's doing here, because it could be the basis of something that could really pull South Africa up by the bootstrings and get us to do some incredible competitive things, make us a country that your kids want to not only be in, but contribute to. And that would be just the most incredible thing of all. So let me bring in Yatish. At this point, he's no stranger to the show. Hey, Yatish, how are you?
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Good. That's a very sexy-looking office. Is that your office?
It is. It is. Wow. It is my home office.
That looks very nice. I'm just taking it all in at the moment. Sorry.
I don't have a mountain or Signal Hill or anything in the background. If you look out the window, it's a lot less sexier. So let's stop there. That's why I face it this way.
I know, but we sent Lebang to Cape Town on purpose so that she could help with This Is Us to look extra sexy this morning, you know?
Nice. It's working.
It is funny though with Zoom and Microsoft Teams and Google Meets and all of these things. It is funny how you like check out other people's places and you go, that looks very nice. Or that doesn't look so great. We're all very judgy about what our backgrounds look like. And if you have
and also, can't you put like a fake one?
Oh, yes. Yeah, a lot of people use the fake ones.
Yeah, it looks so janky. Yeah, with a little blur.
And as soon as you move your head, then the thing doesn't really keep up with you and it looks terrible.
Yeah, and I get extra suspicious because now I really want to see what's in the background. I actually pay more attention when the effect cuts off to go, can I see behind the curtain there?
I wonder how many people are even paying attention because some of them are so busy looking at themselves in the camera, you know, like they're staring at their own picture in the camera so much that you can tell that they're more inspired by that than anything else. All right, guys, it is a beautiful day to be talking to someone who I've got the world of respect for and a huge amount of time for, and he's done an incredible job of writing a book called South Africa's Promise. You can find out more and download it for free at southafricaspromise.org.za. His name is Muzi Kuzwayo. He's an advertising giant, but he's also been in business for many years in South Africa. He knows the ins and outs. He's proud to be an East Rand boy at heart, but he's most passionate about this country and what we need to do, not just what we need to say. And Muzi Kuzwayo is our special guest this morning. Muzi, it's always good to see you. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm well, thanks, Gareth. And you, how are you guys?
Good, good. Yeah, Tish and Lebang are busy trying to find all the people in South Africa who can inspire us and help us to do better and to get the country up and away the way that we all believe we should be. Your book does that, and I think it's probably a great meeting of minds this morning to just have a chat to you about the reason you wrote the book, what you think of where we're going at the moment, and particularly at this juncture in South Africa's history when there's so much at stake. Tell us, first of all, Muzi, why you wrote the book.
Yeah, Gareth, before I get to the book, which I will write just now, I was reading something by Justice Albie Sachs.
Yes.
He talks about the people we are in trying to make in South Africanizing South Africa. It's an old article written around the year 2000. And it says, you know, we are so involved in the struggle and everything else that we forget that even the freedom fighters make love. You know, they want to fall in love. And it's election time. We're supposed to have excitement. And the only person who's really fired up the country is not even on the ballot paper. So there's something fundamentally wrong in this country. And the whole thing is, you know, guys, this is our country. We've got to build it with all its warts, with all its imperfections. And it's a great opportunity to make people achieve great things by helping other people. And that's the reason why I wrote the book. I just came back from KZN last week, and we're helping put water in families. And the people in the area can't believe me or don't believe me when I say to them, it is possible to have a tap of water, running water, inside your house, in your kitchen, in your bathroom, inside the house. They looked at me like I was talking nonsense. We went down to where they fetch their water from. There was a calf that died recently, and they told me that dogs come and drink out of the well that they dug themselves. And they try and drink, and then sometimes they drown, particularly puppies.
Oh, my God.
And then they have to come and drink water from that. Their kettles can only last 6 months because of the quality of water that they're drinking. So after 6 months, the element is covered in something like soot and clay.
Oh, my God.
This is in South Africa in 2021. 20-minute drive away from that, you can buy bottled water.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the horror stories are endless in our country, but also the chances for people to be heroes are endless. So the whole thing about the book, South Africa's Promise, is to find new heroes, hopefully inspire new heroes, who are going to change our country from the terrible state in which it is today to a nirvana, to a paradise for everybody. And I think it is possible.
Well, we were talking this morning about some of the stories in the news. Obviously, we've got all these politicians running around campaigning at the moment, and they keep promising us, you know, your book is called South Africa's Promise, but we're so used to having promises broken by politicians that a lot of us don't even believe in the promise anymore.
Well, as people, we fall in love, and somebody promises you heaven and earth, and then the promise gets broken and the relationship ends. So that happens. Life is like that. It will always evolve like that. But we must never lose hope, because that's what is good. We should hang on to that hope, the pieces of hope, like diamonds, like treasure. We can't lose them because we need them to rebuild our lives and to rebuild the country.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just if I can jump in there, I think the thing I sort of love about the story you're telling and why it's so aligned to the way we're trying to think with This Is Us is, in many ways, Gareth, to your point about broken promises, I think we've got to realize that's probably not the route to realize the promise of South Africa, right? It's not going to be necessarily political. It's probably going to be by the actions we take, like you say. It's probably going to be through heroes that emerge outside of the political system. I often think of, like, for politicians, it feels like it's, you know, elections are like a World Cup for them, right? They pitch up every 4 to 5 years to win this thing, and then they sort of disappear again, and then it's left to us to sort of reap both the sort of negatives and the positives. So, you know, to your point, I think, and that's so much what we try to talk about, is we've got to move from a state of complaining about politicians to realizing actually we're sort of on our own in some ways, and we should be the ones trying to do stuff and not relying on that system, because we can see it's got its own agendas.
Yeah, Tish, but maybe we need new politicians. You see, we can't be a country of NGOs, a country of charity and charity alone. So where we were in KZN, they know more and they see more NGOs than they ever see their own politicians. The people who've been elected, and Saul Alinsky said it. He said, you know, if you guys don't get involved, then the weaker people of society will get involved and they will make the decisions. So we need to make sure maybe we inspire people who never thought of being in politics to get in and change the country, because we can't create a nation of beggars. You know, it pains me. It really pains me to see on social media people putting bags of food on the ground saying, today we donated 1,000 bags of testy rice. Come on, man. Give people dignity. Let people wake up in the morning and be able to go in and earn a living. Give them that opportunity. Mm. So one of the things I noticed in the morning in KZN, I saw somebody with buckets of water. I saw actually buckets of water on their own. And then I saw a lady go up the hill and brought down a wheelbarrow, put those buckets in the hole and put the buckets on the wheelbarrow and took them home uphill. Hmm. It took about 20 minutes. So here's a systemic disadvantage. So instead of being early at work or doing whatever you need to do, be at school, you're busy trying to get something that somebody's going to take less than a minute to fill in their bath, to take a shower, 3 minutes, they're done, and they're competing already. Mm. So we can be people can be very proud, oh, we supplied water there. But what we've actually done is we have not removed the systemic disadvantages that create a pool of domestic workers and gardeners. We should be giving people an opportunity to succeed. And our greatest resource as a country is not the minerals. It's not. Yeah. The greatest resource is the minds of our people.
So, Muzi, what I like about the book, apart from the story itself, which Lebang referred to earlier as being really just something beautiful that you could share with children and adults alike, but what I love is that there are practical solutions here too. And that's really where Yatish and Lebang and I are trying to go with this. And it's where the whole This Is Us movement is trying to go. You address some very straightforward things. You say that citizen service is a big part of this. Now, explain to me what citizen service is and how that would involve all of us.
Yeah. So we need to create citizens. That's the first thing. And, you know, we're not born as citizens. We learn at home, we learn from home, we learn from school, we learn when we start working, how to respond, how to behave as people. And you will remember that in the 90s, we had the AIDS pandemic, and a lot of people grew up in childhood homes. So there was nobody in the family to tell you, you will not do this, or do this. So it was, they were learning by doing themselves. We've got a huge, according to the stats, 10% of South African population were actually died from HIV and AIDS, from AIDS particularly, sorry. So, and these are things we forget. And now we spend quite a lot of time in rural areas, and we find youngsters who have never been given those kind of opportunities. So you need a citizen service that's going to teach them how to make your bed, because some of them probably slept on the floor. Mm. How to clean it, how to look presentable.
Yeah.
So when you go for a job interview or to get funding, how are you going to look like? And most importantly, how to care for your neighbor. Because if we don't care for each other as neighbors, then we have no society. We have no community. The citizen service will train people that, those basic things. We spoke about this at Orange Farm with some guys. And we said, you know, I recommend, we're talking about the book. The first thing that happened was somebody raised his hand up and said, you know, I'd love to read the book, but I can't read. And this is a 19-year-old young South African. He can't read. Almost 30 years into our democracy. So the problems that we're having, guys, are the ones that we're not talking about. So he can't read. And one teacher was telling me from around the area there, he said, you know, of the 1,400 kids at their school, 1,000 of them don't have papers. So they've let them into the school illegally. So imagine those who went, if these teachers did not decide to break the law and let these 1,000 kids in, our problems would be exacerbated. Mm. So these are, like I say, the horror stories are endless in our country. But a citizen service, so I say to those one guy, okay, good. I'm going to read the book, and I've translated the book into isiZulu, and into Tshivenda as well, so we've got those two translations ready. I'm going to read it out as well. But the one guy says, okay, after 2 years, what are you going to do for me? I turned around and I said, well, dude, I hope after 2 years, you would have found out what you will do for your country and for your citizens, fellow citizens. So that's what citizen service is about, to train you that you're not the person, it's not the duty of the world to give you stuff, but your duty to give to the world.
That's a very big move.
That is so powerful.
And right? Really, I mean, this is just so inspiring to me, because citizens are empowered. Subjects, you know, you're the subject of a ruler, but you're a citizen because you decide to be. I said before you came on, Muzi, we don't really teach civics in South Africa. So people don't really have an appreciation for what it means to be a participant in a democracy or in a free country. And that means you sometimes have to fight for things, and you sometimes have to risk things, and you sometimes have to take a chance. But it also means that there is a responsibility for the government in all of this. Unfortunately, I think we live in a country where people expect the government to be responsible for everything in their lives. And that's obviously very disempowering.
Well, I guess that's how we've been taught, isn't it? One bishop explained it so vividly. He said, people see service delivery as a bus that comes in, it drops, it delivers the service, and then moves on to the next bus stop and to the next bus stop. And it'll come back a few days later or a few hours later. Actually, in rural areas where we're doing a lot of work, people see the bus only twice a day. Mm. In the morning, so if you miss the 7:30 bus, you can't go to town. You can't go anywhere until the 5 o'clock bus comes back, and then it'll be the following day. So what I think we need to do, guys, is we've lived in a world where we think everything gets done for us, and that everybody has to be kind to our problems. The world doesn't work like that. The sun shines for everybody. The lightning strikes at everyone who's unfortunate. And we're going to start having that. If we're going to build our country, we are competing with the best in the world. We've got to create people who are great at what they do so we can create an economy that will feed the younger ones. If we don't do that, we are going to be a basket case. I mean, and it's happened to great countries. Do you remember around 2008, maybe you guys won't remember, people used to talk of the pigs, Portugal, Spain,
and Italy.
Greece, and Ireland.
Italy.
And then they ended up writing, yeah, I remember, because they ended up writing pigs with a double I. So good countries do get into trouble. And I think we are there, actually. So to push ourselves out of that, we can only rely on ourselves. Because if we rely on other people, outsiders, other countries to help us, they do so at a price. They want cost. They give us a loan. They want the returns on that cost. So we have to rely on ourselves, and we have to inspire one another to be able to achieve.
But Muzi, how do we go from, you know, really just sitting and applying some of these matters in the place of inspiring action and really place where the is not feeling inspired? Nobody is feeling that hope that we spoke of earlier.
Lebang, your microphone's breaking up a little bit. Just pull it away from your top. Oh. Yeah. I'm not sure why.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That, let me put it there. So
there we go.
In a nutshell, how do we inspire action and organically?
Can I take leave from my old teachers? My idols in life are my teachers, my school teachers from primary school to high school. You know, I grew up in a very small township, Guatemala. It's become bigger now. Every teacher made it his or her responsibility to make sure that his kids pass. That's the first thing, that they inspire us, that they we do the right things. Recently, one of my English teachers, Mrs. Mteto, so was telling me a story of how he used to get some of the guys, I knew that some of the guys used to go and visit her on the weekends, but she had discovered that they didn't have anything to eat. So she'd be able to create a good meal for them and help them with extra classes in it at her house. And they did very well. So if we care for our neighbors, if we care for the children that we teach, if we care for the people who work for us, if we care for the people we see on the streets in whom we see potential, that's how we build it. We do not have, the apartheid government was trying to do its best to make sure that everybody doesn't succeed in Guatemala. The teachers fought it themselves. They gave us everything and more to help us. All I'm asking is let's just return the favor.
Yeah, you know, Muzi, to your point about maybe we need new breeds of sort of politicians, there's a saying I love, which is, you know, politics is too important to be left to politicians. It's a similar thought, right? But, you know, probably one of the biggest challenges we have at the moment, even in This Is Us, in terms of getting people to act, getting people to actually do things, is, you know, people are tired. To Garrett's point, it's been a long year and a half. You know, guys have struggled through COVID. Everyone's sort of in survival mode, just trying to coast through the rest of the year. Probably the last thing, you know, certainly the appeal we're finding, the last thing people want to hear is, you know, what are you doing for someone else? Do something positive. You know, everyone's like, oh, you know, to be honest, I just want to get through the end of the year, or I just want to get through elections, or I just want to get through the vaccination run. Even businesses are going, you know, our resources are tired. Our resources are here. Our resources are there. We don't have resource to kind of to break the sort of apathy at the moment. So, you know, what do you think, you know, especially, again, coming from the sort of communications industry, like what's the sort of message we need to be driving that get people to sort of break out of the cycle of apathy and saying, let me do, even if it's one small thing, it doesn't need to be big sweeping things, right? To your point, it's just care for your neighbor, just buy local, just support the people around you, even within 5Ks, you know, if everybody just worries about their little radius, you know, that collective benefit, it works. How do we break that?
Yadish, you know, you said a very important thing, that politics is too important to leave to the politicians. You know, the person I think who started this, who said something similar, was Sun Tzu, the military general of China. He said, war is too important to leave the generals alone. So because there are a lot of things that are involved. They drain the resources of the country. They drain the morale of the country. They do the war. There's a lot of those kind of things. So, yes, we're tired. But that's what makes champions. You know, I always say, if you look in sport, it goes down to seconds and milliseconds. The guy who just has, or a woman who's got that one millisecond of strength to go forward. You know, just one, this 1 millisecond, if I can just push a little bit more, that's what makes the champions. So if we give up now, we're going to be in trouble. We are in a continent that is a good example for the world of how not to run a country, how not to be in a particular country. So we have to, if we want to create a country of champions, we've got to dig deep when everybody's tired. If you're in the boxing ring, when the other guy is tired, just keep bouncing, keep, you know, avoid the punches, land jabs if you have to, but that is life. Life is this is Africa, it's quite a tough place. And that's what's going to make us win.
Yeah.
Is the self-motivation, speak to yourself.
And this got me into some trouble last week, Musi, but no one is really that interested in everyone's, we all have a sub story, you know, like we all have toughness in our, everyone has had their own struggle and we can't compare our struggles because there's always going to be someone worse off than you. But really, if we're going to win, we need to think about what we can do, not how we've been prevented from doing things or what we can't, because that's not going to help us.
No, you know, I was raised by my grandmother was an orphan, and a friend of mine also lost his parents very early, so he was an orphan, really. He was also raised by his grandmother. My grandmother and my friend got along very well, like house and fire. They just, you know, because they look at us like, oh, man, your mom's still alive. What are you crying for? You know, it's not a right solution for anything. In fact, sometimes, I mean, they'd literally laugh at us. Like, oh, we think we've got all the world's problems. I only lost my mother last year, and it still hurts. So, but that's how it is. The world is we're mammals, and the world can be softer. It has become kinder. Mm. We must create a kind world, but we must also understand that the world is a tough place. You know, I read a book by David Axelrod. It was called Believer, and he was Barack Obama's strategist, political strategist. The things that were thrown at Barack Obama, most of which were actually, I mean, were terrible, were really terrible. But he said something in the book to say, you know, campaigning is an X-ray into the candidate's soul and character. And if you want to take the top position, you have to go through those fires. A lot of it is terrible, but people have got to know that you've got what it takes. What it takes to fight for the millions or billions of rands that get consumed, that get misappropriated, that get misused. And that's the difficulty of life. I think, which is why I think even with good citizens, strong citizens, we would not be in the problems that we have today. I spoke to a friend a few years ago who was an accountant in a big metro, and told me how politicians come in and want to strangle them for the tender to supply milk to the council. So it's those that really, that's the dirty, grimy, oily stuff that people have to deal with. And if we don't have strong citizens, we aren't going to have a good country.
Yeah. I mean, we've been speaking a lot to various political candidates and to people who are standing as independents. But really, you don't have to have an office in order to make a difference, right? This is the other thing, is that South Africans, a lot of us believe, unless you are the president or unless you are the ward councillor, unless you are the mayor, then you're powerless. But that's not true.
No, absolutely, that's not true. You know, I just saw a message from Henry, who says the only way for minorities to be heard is to vote race-based. Well, firstly, my great and dear grandfather, his name was Henry as well. but we can't do that. No. If we protect people. I come from a pre-apartheid township, Painville. I was born in a pre-apartheid township. So, I mean, apartheid came in 1948, Painville came in 1928. There are so many mixed races from people who come with us. I'm sorry I use that term. There are so many people who come from different backgrounds because black people and white people live next to each other. So many white people, but particularly colored people and Indian people. So there were so many intermarriages. And Henry's point takes us to another very important point, which I try to deal with in the book, that nationalism is a dead concept. It worked during the colonial era, when the British could separate themselves from the Spaniards, they could separate themselves from the Portuguese. But the world has merged so many times, and so many people have. If I'm saying I am South African, who is South African? I ask a group of youth, who is South African? I think South Africa was promulgated, old South Africa, in 1961, 1960, thereabouts. I can't remember the exact date. I think it was the 31st of May or something like that. I'm going to double check.
Yeah, Republic Day, they used to call it.
Republic of South Africa. Yeah, that's right. You know, so things and times have changed. I mean, if you read books like, different books, My African Journey by Churchill, Winston Churchill, and you look at his definition of capitalism and white people, and you look at what the world is today, it's two different worlds. So we cannot try to go back to the past, because the past does not exist anymore. It's exactly like the future. It doesn't exist yet. We must imagine it.
I'm so glad you brought that up too, because in your book, the story that the old man tells to this young girl is that it doesn't actually matter what your ideology is or where you get the old ideas, which many of them of which are outdated, you know, whether it's a Churchill or a Karl Marx or anyone else. Those things are less important than what you want to do going forward.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, I went to East Germany when I was still a student. I went to East Germany. It was occupied by the Soviet Union at the time. And I remember these young soldiers had pimples on their faces still. They were so young. And they were marching everywhere in Potsdam, from East Berlin. They were marching. We got there very early in the morning the first day. And it was winter, so, you know, the sun rises pretty late. And here were these kids marching. And then there were queues for food in East Germany. And I had never seen that, people queuing up to a restaurant because of the of the allocations for the food that they were getting. This was the communist East Germany. In West Germany, life looked a lot more interesting, but they had people sleeping under the bridges. So both of these, I've seen them have their own problems. And I mean, for all intents and purposes, South Africa, even then, apartheid South Africa, was a socialist state in many ways. You know, a lot of people were given stuff. You know, there were few companies that could do certain things. There was a lot of regulation. So we must imagine a new society. When Karl Marx wrote his book, Das Kapital, cars weren't being manufactured then. Now they're being manufactured by robots. So people are going to be losing jobs. We must reimagine the future that we want. It can't be based on Marxism or on capitalism as Adam Smith saw it. Because when Adam Smith wrote his book, slave labor, it was the same year that America was promulgated. Slave labor was common. You know, it was free labor. Today, you have to pay minimum wages. And not only that, wages are being lost to robots. So come on, guys, we can't, for God's sake, why are we getting all so educated and unable to solve our own social problems?
Well, Raisi Beck is saying we have to have Muzi back. You brought him in too late. So people want to hear more from you. Well, what I can suggest is get the book. It's called South African Promise, and it is available on southafricaspromise.org.za, and you can go and download it for free. Final thoughts from you, Lebang, and Yatish.
I wish I could get this information and just share it with my gran as simply as you did to me. But she's, you know, really married to the connection that
just
she made.
Just hold your microphone out, Lebang, just a little bit. I don't know what's going on there. Sorry.
Sorry, guys. I'm saying, like, I wish it was as simple as just taking this information and sharing it with, you know, the elders, so that they can also see the vision for the future. I will start, though, by giving them the book, maybe reading it to them, maybe, you know, just getting them to shift their mindsets.
No, don't try to shift them. Go to their funerals. Go bury them.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I remember seeing a marketing strategy for Pepsi years ago, saying the good thing about our market is that they're going to 21st year parties, and our competitor, meaning Coca-Cola, they're going to more funerals. If a person is attending more funerals than parties, don't bother about them. It's too costly to change their mind. It's expensive. Don't worry about them. That's what life's about. It's going to take you too much time and money to try and to convince them, and still you won't convince them.
Sure. Okay.
Anyway, our country, for the first time in 2024, the majority of voters would not have experienced apartheid. So that's it's a natural attrition. You know, that's how life works. Sorry, Yatish. I hope I didn't come back. I speak over you. Sorry. I apologize.
Yatish?
All good. I mean, I think my closing thoughts, I think you guys mentioned this in the chat, and I've also seen the stats so many times about, you know, the margin by which the last election was decided versus the millions of people that didn't vote. You know, and I think what we've also got to, you know, the one thing we haven't spoken about, so we've spoken a lot about positivity, we've spoken a lot about those things, I think we often do, but the one thing we don't speak about maybe enough is that, you know, apart from people being tired, people are also pissed off, right? That's why people don't vote. And maybe, you know, what we should also realize is that anger is a valuable emotion, right? Anger is a valuable resource as well. And if you're angry with the state of things, the way to protest is not probably not to just not vote. I mean, that's, you can do it if you like. I'm not going to encourage it either way. But try then building stuff. To Muzi's point, then be an active citizen. You know, if you're annoyed with the system that isn't working, be the system that could work, versus just sort of cancel everything and sit back and say, you know, it's all poked.
Well, Yatish, you know, you talk about anger. Muhammad Ali's coach used to say to him, because Muhammad Ali would be angry, he said, Muhammad, anger is like a fire. You can use it 100%. To cook, or you can burn the house down with it. So you make the call. So I think let's use the anger to cook.
There we go. I think that's an awesome note to end it all on this morning. This Is Us is part of what we do here on a Tuesday on cliffcentral.com. And of course, Lebang, you've got your own show on a Thursday where you continue these conversations. Make sure you don't miss Life with Lebang. And as a part of that, the continuation of This Is Us. Yatish Nasi, thank you very much. Lebang Hosana, and most importantly, Muzi Kuzwayo, for your time this morning. Go and check out Muzi's book at southafricaspromise.org.za. And you know what? Even though he says don't bother about the old people, read it to them as well. Maybe there are a few of them we can still change. Thank you all very, very much.
Cool, everybody. Bye.
Thank you. Cheers. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.